eat.
Oh, so good.
Drink. Talk. Rick Redding and Steve Coombs serve up savory conversations about Louisville's world-famous restaurant food and drink scene. The wine is uncorked, the bourbon neat, the apps are on the table. Here comes the main course.
And here we are once again talking about eating and drinking on Louisville's top restaurant and bar podcast. Steve, it's a place where we dive deep into local dining and drinking, right?
And get dirty in the process, too. Just right. Greasy and
it's rough work.
It is.
I've been catching myself telling people I got to be very careful not to complain about eating too much and drinking too much.
First world problem. Yeah, I hear all the time. Yeah. And with the basketball tournament, that's kind of given me a bit of a reprieve, which is kind of nice.
Oh, okay.
Because I want to watch it at home.
I don't know. I think I might have eaten more. But anyway, let's talk about our sponsors. First up is the Eye Care Institute, your one-stop shop for eye care. Whether you have routine vision issues or need significant corrections such as LASIK, or you suffer with cataracts, glaucoma, macular degeneration, or diabetes, the Eye Care Institute is where you want to visit. They're located right here in Butchertown at 1536 Story Avenue. To get an appointment, call 502-589-1500.
And Harvest, where every Thursday is three-course Thursday, meaning you get a $30 three-course meal from Chef Patrick Groney's Kitchen and Crew. Hard to find a better deal in town that day, I say. You need to call and make reservations, though. It's a busy spot, 384-9090, or make them online at harvestlouisville.com. 624 East Market in New Lou.
Yum, yum. Well, there's a lot of news going on around the restaurant scene this week, Steve.
You know, and kind of ironically, Harvest, one of its owners, was telling me several months ago he was really concerned about the rearrangement of the convention center and how that's going to affect downtown restaurants. And we learned today from Insider Louisville that Z's Oyster Bar downtown has closed because of that. It said it's really dampened traffic and that it's going to close temporarily is what the sign says outside. But
We're skeptical.
I don't know how you do that and reopen, especially a significant space like that. It's a 12,000 square foot restaurant.
Yeah, well, it's hard to imagine all the people and business that are going to be downtown. Maybe it could, because when all this is finished, when the Omni's finished and the convention center's finished, it's going to be really a spectacular space.
But how do you pay that rent when there's nobody coming in? Getting steaks and oysters.
Yeah, good question. Now, I will say, and this may just be for PR purposes, but I've been doing some work with the folks that run 4th Street Live, and you know, they don't seem to feel the effect as strongly of the convention center.
Yeah, and I've heard from people very near the convention center saying there's not been a problem.
Yeah.
So I don't know. If I want to go somewhere, I'm going to go there. And if there's an inconvenience, I'm still going to go there. I just plan for that. So, but maybe in a tourist area like that, maybe that's an area. I mean, that's an issue.
Yeah, you think there's a possibility that could be, but you got new restaurants opening on 4th Street Live. You got a bunch of activity all around there. So
yeah. Well, I like the owner, Mirzad Sharbayani, was the guy that moved up from busboy to assistant waiter to make room for me back in 1980 at Casperzani. Wow. So. I hope he picks it back up again. He's a good guy.
Yeah. Well, they got a location out in the East End on Weddington Parkway, right. So maybe people can go out there.
But with restaurants that are opening, the Red Herring, we learned today, is opening in the Hilltop Tavern, not Tavern, Hilltop Theater spot on Frankfort Avenue, which is catty-corner to the Hilltop Tavern.
The Hilltop Tavern, which is still closed. The sign says for now remodeling. You remember about a month ago it shut down because of some sort of plumbing problem.
Yep.
With their building.
And I spoke to Clay Wallace last week, the owner of he just sold Cafe Lulu. I guess it was after
our on Eat Drink Talk.
He said that was the first place they had the Cafe Lulu, and he said doesn't surprise me one bit that it's plumbing. He said the innards of that whole operation were rough when he was there. So, but back to Red Herring. So that's going to be a cocktail lounge first and kind of a restaurant second.
I read your story on the site, Steve, and it sounds like the kind of place I want to go.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Cocktails and a 100 cocktail list of the most classic cocktails ever. I think that's what Brett said, something to that extent. But Brett Davis is the guy behind it. He is the partner, or one of a few partners in Doc Crow's and Doc's Cantina, which still sits empty, unfortunately, for them. I hate that for them.
I know. I can't imagine writing that check every month.
Yeah, exactly. But it's going to open up in the third week of April, so it's soon.
Everybody wants to be open for Derby. right?
No, he says actually in the interview that he doesn't want it, he doesn't want to be noticed during Derby and expects not to be because out of town people won't know the restaurant. So
there you go.
That gives them a slower ramp up to prepare.
Well, I think that neighborhood, you know, when I'm driving around, I see a lot of people. Hilltop Tavern was just has been and may again be just a great place to hang out and stuff. So maybe some of those folks will wander across the street. And, of course, the Silver Dollar is
right next door.
Yeah.
Right next door. I really believe that will just only lift traffic down to that corner rather than not cannibalize, but take customers from each other. I think it's going to be a great thing down there.
Well, all these changes, Steve, led to some changes at another spot. It's sort of it's like the college basketball coaching carousel, right?
You know,
one opening leads to another opening. Somebody moves from one to the other.
Well, in NASCAR, they call that the silly season when drivers change teams. And so I don't know if this would really be a silly season with chefs. But so 8UP has had in the past 4 weeks or 6 weeks maybe all of its executive level people leave. The general manager Julie DeFriend is gone. Now she's in wine distribution. The bar manager Clay Livingston is gone. He's going to be the man behind the bar at Red Herring. And Jacob Coronado, the executive chef at 8UP, is the chef now at Red Herring.
There you go.
And so what we have learned though is that none of them really wanted to stick around for the way that 8UP is changing. And that's kind of a positive thing, too, that the crowd that it has drawn is kind of a party crowd and not necessarily the finer dining crowd or the higher-end cocktail crowd. And that's working out well for the Hilton Hotel, which is where 8UP is. And they just wanted to move on and do something else. So
yeah. Well, that's good and that's bad. I remember we had a memorable dinner there at 8UP. You and I, Steve.
Yeah,
and
it was great.
That was
Feed
several
Me Chef
months ago. Yeah, that was really good. So anyway, well, we had a big story last week on the site about Bourbon and Beyond, which is going to be just a phenomenal event for the city, it sounds like.
We hope. I mean, we're certainly looking at we were supplied with, shall we say, the sales pitch. It was a PDF file. It was probably a PowerPoint at some point that detailed everything that Danny Wimber Presents wants to do for this festival. And it is ambitious. It's big and busy. And so far, Wimmer does not want to talk about it until the details are ironed out. So I get a sense that he is promising the moon at this point.
Yeah. And I got all excited. I saw those preview materials, and it had like Amy Schumer and Aziz Ansari.
Yeah.
And a bunch of
Anthony
great,
Bourdain.
A bunch of great people. I said, are they all coming?
Exactly. Talking about Michelin-starred chefs, and like, we don't have any of those here. So, It'll be interesting, and we'll detail that this week on eatdrinktalk.net and show you a bit about what he's promising and maybe weigh in to say whether we think it can happen.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to note, as the story that I wrote about this was talking with the mayor's office, you know, 3 years ago, the mayor wanted to boost tourism for bourbon, et cetera, in this town, and he formed this large committee, over 50 people on it, to come up with ideas to boost tourism on it. And the first thing on that list was a big bourbon festival.
Right.
Like this. Exactly
right.
Like this. So
right.
Danny Wimmer Presents just came along and did it. And, of course, it does make more sense for them because down there at Champions Park, I don't know how often you've been down there, but I think the only event I've ever heard of being down there is the Louder Than Life Festival.
Which
he puts on, which you'll hear anywhere in the 5 mile vicinity.
Right.
It goes on, and it's going to happen the week after this Bourbon Beyond event happens. So,
right,
all makes sense.
Well, a little closer to home, last week too, the Beam cocktail program was just launched at the Urban Stillhouse on 4th Street Live, which is really cool. I got to sit through it, and you get to make your own cocktails with the guidance of not a cocktail ambassador, but somebody to make sure that you don't shake your bourbon all across the room there.
But you get, I want to do that.
It gives people an opportunity to understand the fundamentals of cocktail making. So go check it out sometime. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, let's wrap up the news and get on to our first guest, Steve. I happen to have the privilege of going down to the new brewery at Great Flood, and I think it's a phenomenal story about three guys who were basically college students doing homebrew, and you know, basically instead of using their business degrees to go out and get jobs behind desks, they they started a business.
Turned it into the hobby into a job.
And then, of course, you know, Great Flood is down there in the Highlands as a tap room, but they're also doing a very ambitious brewing program over there. And it's down on Bergman Street in Shelby Park. I've done a lot of... We've seen talk about Shelby Park a lot lately because that's where Safai is going in, and there's an architectural firm going in there. A lot of activity down there, but this is not a place you're going to just stumble across.
But that's where your kegs and cans of Great Flood will be coming from.
That's yeah. Right. So I talked to two of the three young men who are behind the project, Zach Barnes and Matt Fuller. I think it's pretty interesting interview.
Head coach of the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, Jeff Rom.
Today I'm with Matt Jones,
Kevin Harned,
Pat Forty.
I'm with Anoush Shariot,
Kristen Wall,
United States Congressman John Yarmuth,
Sarah Brofancher, and Susie Eastman.
I have Kristen Boone,
one of St. Matthew's most favorite sons, Danny Flanagan.
It's Pat Day.
The list goes on and on. The most interesting people in the Ville are on the Rusty Satellite Show with Rick Redding. New episodes Thursdays on Louisville.am.
All right. I am in, I guess this is Shelby Park, where Great Flood Brewing Company is now located. I'm with Zach Barnes. Zach, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And Matt Cain, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
This is all new, right? It's an old building. It used to be an electrical supply house, but... it's quite a story, taking it from lowly broke college students to running an operation like this.
Lowly broke production managers.
There we go. Yeah. Well, it's been quite a journey. We're very excited to be here in Shelby Park and to base most of our production business here and to maintain their tap room on Bartstown Road. It's a pretty exciting time for us. It's pretty scary sometimes, but it's been an adventure so far.
Yeah, I guess so. And now, a lot of people are familiar with the Bartstown Road, the tap house, and I guess every time I drive there at night, there's a ton of people in there. That's what you want, right?
That's what we aim for when we open. It's not guaranteed by any means. We have been thrilled with the reception we've had in that particular area. A lot of our regular clientele is, you know, within the mile of our tap room, and that's something that we... could have only dreamt of, and just the support that we have from that client base has allowed us to kind of jump out and try to get, you know, I guess more customers from our production side of our business throughout the rest of the city. Kind of make our name for good beer known throughout
okay.
the rest of the
city. Well, it's one thing to operate a bar in Bartstown Road successfully, but another to go into a full production mode like we have in this beautiful facility you have. Matt, there must be some inherent interest in brewing beer from you guys.
Yeah.
How far does that go back?
Yeah, we started in 2012 homebrewing. We were doing 5-gallon. We started with extract, went into all grain, got into some competitions. We went straight from that to that first location. You know, we were doing 2 barrels, which kind of at the end of the 2 weeks, you get about 4 of the big half-barrel kegs. It's about 62 gallons finished. And then... we went straight from that to here. We've got a 15-barrel hot side, which is about 465 gallons, and then we double that into 30-barrel fermenters. So I'm bad at math, but I think that's 930 a day. So it's been pretty big jumps for us. You know, it takes about the same amount of time and a similar amount of effort. So it's kind of nice to be able to put in, you know, that same 12-13-hour day and end up with a lot more beer. It makes okay. you feel a little better.
Yeah, you got a lot more beer. And Zach, and I understand is your other partner is the marketing guy, right? Okay, so he's got the challenge of I guess getting the beer to other places to be drunk. But how's the distribution network going?
Yeah, so Kentucky operates in what's called the 3-tier system, and so Vince's job as head of marketing and branding is kind of to establish a relationship with retailers so they know like kind of what to expect from our production side. They buy it from a distributor, which would be the second step in the 3-tier system. So that relationship is also pretty well established with most of those. They operate distributors operate throughout the state and throughout this city in particular. As well, we really try to let people know who we are, where we're from, what beer they can expect to see from us, and to make sure that, you know, they have quality assurances that, like, you know, we will produce the same, you know, quality beer That tastes the same brand, and kind of what to expect throughout the rest of the season. So that's Vince's kind of like, you know, his main job. Currently, it's just three of us in production, sales, and finance, and janitorial. So we do a little bit of everything. And so, like, you know, our primary job is sometimes the job we spend the least amount of time on. And but we always try to get out. Vince does a very good job of establishing those relationships with, you know, local businesses in Louisville. We being from Louisville, we want to make sure that we always put a precedent on establishing those relationships here. People know how to get in a hold of us. People know what to expect from us, and can continue to sell to their customers in a way in which they can trust our brand, that they know what they're getting.
Okay. Well, you had a big event last week. The mayor came out and did a shaky howdy. And did you serve him up a beer?
Yeah, he was definitely always interested in talking to us. You know, he's done some really good things for craft beer in Louisville. You know, not just with us over the years, and so he's been really excited just for anything as far as entrepreneurship based, and he's really embraced the craft liquids. You know, the distilleries that have been coming to town and the breweries. He's been really good to us. Just a quick going back for a second, any of you potential restaurant owners or orders out there, our distributor is River City in Louisville. So if you're listening out there in podcast land, shameless self-promotion there.
Well, that's what this is all about. Let's self-promote. Let me ask you, people that don't know a little bit much about Great Flood, let's talk about the basic. Where'd the name come from?
Yeah, so we locked ourselves in Matt's basement one day to figure out a name for this business as we were kind of nearing an open date and trying to establish a lease with a building. We really, as Louisville residents, we're very interested in why the city is arranged as it is, the way it has a certain feel to it, that like there's a great amount of pride taken from people who live in the city. We want to make sure that we paid homage to that and figured out why that is. And a lot of the research that we did, it seemed to be that the Great Flood of 1937 set about a pattern shift in the way Louisville was arranged, and also in how it kind of worked together with its citizenry and created a good community that people still love being a part of today. So when we researched the Great Flood, one of the things that we wanted to establish was that we're not celebrating a natural disaster. We're honoring the way people recovered from it, mm-hmm. and the way that people gave back to their neighbor, and the way the businesses gave to their employees, and just kind of all of those things to just really establish that this is what we are here to do in the city as well, and to make a reputation based on fairness and just good business practices.
Okay, so you went down, you locked yourself in a room, you weren't coming out till you got a name, right?
Sure,
okay.
Yeah.
So what was the second choice?
Oh, well, there were a lot that we went through. You know, there as more and more breweries open up, especially, but just any kind of businesses in the food and beverage industry, names become a little closer to each other, and there, you know, have been some trademark disputes, especially in beer, over the last few years, and that's understandable. And so there are obviously, you know, a lot of things that go with the city of Louisville, where we wanted to be Louisville-centric, and we wanted to really focus on kind of the people in the community being what makes Louisville, so special to us. And so, you know, there's some of those, like Falls was obviously out, you know, Derby was obviously out. And so some of those, more common ones were just not even potential options. So I don't know exactly what I would say that the second choice was, but if that kind of explains some of the hardships of coming up with names that mean something to you, but are maybe a little bit more off the beaten path, so you don't get those pesky little letters asking you to stop what you're doing.
you hate those. Now, you guys... I guess started as college students. Tell me how the three of you met and decided to start a business.
You want to take that?
Yeah, just a series of poor life choices, I think, is really what it boils down to.
He was drunk one night. And...
Yeah. No, I mean, we were all friends in college. We were in business school, so we knew each other from there. Zach and I actually knew each other from high school a little before. And, Vince, we all kind of ran in the same group, and we had the same interests. And basically, we just started, you know, drinking some beer, and it, you know, starts out, I think, as a lot of people, and Zach's a little different. He came in a little bit later as far as the beer drinking side of it. But, you know, you start drinking kind of whatever is at the party or whatever's on special, and then, you know, you maybe try something that's a seasonal or something you hadn't seen before. And I think, like, that light kind of went off, like, oh, man, this is kind of cool. I didn't know that beer could taste like this. I always thought it was this one thing. And when that door kind of opens, I think sometimes it's like, well, I'm just some dumb guy, but I think I've got some ideas of what I could put in beer and make it taste kind of cool. And so that's where, you know, we were just incredibly cheap about it, which is nice because that kind of laid the groundwork for everything we've done since then, because we haven't really ever had any money to do things the right way. But we all kind of pulled in together and used a Groupon to buy a homebrew kit. And I guess it was kind of the rest of the story laid itself out from there. But that's how we got into it. Yeah.
Well, tell me about the beer a little bit. I don't know if you guys have a specialty, anything you really like to focus on, or what your best seller is.
Well, we have we'd be considered like special flagship beers. Those beers that you can kind of expect retailers to carry more often than not. We have a number of draft options available. We've kind of, like, on the two barrel system, we brewed close to 90 different beers. So we have deep pockets as far as that is concerned, but Findaway IPA and the Toasted Brown are kind of our two staples right now. Yeah. They're the ones that we can. Those are the two options you'll see on shelves, liquor stores, and can stores throughout the city. Also, draft options, those tend to be the most available, but we really are proud of everything we make, and we're not going to put it out in the market unless we think it's a great example of the style or a great beer that people would like to grab in any particular circumstance. So I'll let Matt describe those beers. But
we talked a little bit earlier too about how we're getting our barrel age program set up here, so those will be some exciting things. They'll be ready kind of when we start getting into summer, which I know is what everyone wants when it's 100 degrees outside, a 12% barrel-aged breakfast stout. But, we can sit on those for a little while longer, too. We're just excited to sneak some out when we can. So the two big ones are the Findaway IPA. It's 7%. It's, kind of the quintessential American IPA. It still is kind of bitter. I know some people are shy or, doing different things now, which are all very interesting. But ours is a little bit more bitter. It's about 95 IBUs. We use Galena for bittering, which is a pretty clean, crisp bitter, in our opinion. We use Cascade and Centennial for kind of late hop additions, and then also a lot of dry hopping. And so those are really some of the older hops that have been around and really kind of scream American IPA as far as the citrus rind, grapefruit, and kind of a lightly floral additions. Those are things that just really have always stuck with us. They're some of our favorite kind of flavor profiles, and so that's what we picked for that flagship. And then the Toasted Brown Ale is a little bit different than some other brown ales. It finishes quite dry. It's 5.2%. It has English brown malt, which I think gives it kind of this toasty, nutty, and like milk chocolate character, and not nearly as much roast as some of the darker roasted malts. And then it has a bunch of toasted oats in it, so that kind of gives it a smoother, kind of silky, almost creamy mouthfeel. And mouthfeel is one of those weird things you talk about with beer, and I don't think you're supposed to say on the radio or podcast, but I just did it twice, so sorry about that. And I think that's a really nice one too. It looks it's a little bit darker in color, but it's so light. I mean, we love drinking it in the summer too, so we'll see how that goes.
All right, well, it sounds great. I got to wrap it up here, but I want to give you a chance to talk about what can we expect out of Great Flood in the you've moved into this great facility. Have you plotted out a master plan for growth?
Yeah, we always have.
You're the numbers guy, Zach.
We've had plans on plans since we started.
Wasted a lot of paper.
Some of those have gotten torn up, ripped up, crumpled up, and recycled. But the we've done our best to try to anticipate where the growth's going to come from. We're still in that stage of the business where there are a lot of folks in the city that have no idea we exist, and that's something that we've been aware of since we opened the tap room, and we're looking forward to introducing our brand to those people and hopefully becoming a staple purchase for a lot of folks around the city, both in can purchasing and also draft options. We want to really be Louisville-centric in our distribution patterns. We're very proud to be here, be from the city, and hopefully we can grow along with the city as well.
And the only other thing that I'll add to that is, obviously, that's all the business side. One of the things we were most excited about being here, obviously, all the extra beer, the added capacity. We've got a lot of new toys, and it's made our lives a lot easier. But one of the biggest things for us is we put a ton of time and money in our lab. And so we've got what we believe to be a pretty advanced one for our size kind of in here. And so we just have a really strong commitment to quality and consistency. And that's something that I guess doesn't sound that sexy, but it really, when you talk to brewers, I mean, that's the thing that everyone's pushing on. And so to be able to make sure that we keep that in the forefront is something that we're super excited about going forward.
Matt's very excited about it.
Yeah.
He tells everyone.
Don't get me started on process technology. You'll lose all of your listeners.
Well, that's unfortunately, we don't have another podcast to talk about processing technology, but it's a fascinating subject. Maybe we'll come back and do it again.
Sure, yeah.
Or hang out at the tap room.
There
you go. Brewinglabs.com. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Alec Voles, co-host of the What Happens Next podcast on Louisville.am. We talk about improv each week with We Are the Louisville Improvisers. With,
yeah, totally.
With Chris Anger and Brian Hines.
Yeah.
And Jenny.
Where's my water?
Okay. Well, right now we're just having a few treats. So, we hope you can listen. Find us at Louisville.am in iTunes or using the Stitcher app on your iPhone or Android device.
Great interview from the guys at Great Flood Brewing. It's kind of cool because I've watched them for 4 years now or however long they've been in the business. I remember doing some stories on them for Insider Louisville and just like watching them grow up.
I know what it's like. In 2010, they were in college. Sweet little boys.
They're still baby faced, but yeah. Go up there and check out the tap room sometime at the Loop. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it really is. So that was good. So it's time for our favorite segments, and we have a wonderful sponsor for this segment.
As always, Copper and King's Distillery in Butchertown, creators of delicious pot-distilled American brandies right in the heart of bourbon country. Visit the distillery at 1121 East Washington Street in Butchertown. Their next cool event, they always have a cool event, like last Friday. I went to the launch of the Blue Sky Mining brandy of theirs, a seven-year-old musket brandy. It was awesome. But they had fog machines. They had these artists, you know, that kind of hang, like the acrobats, they hang from silk, you know, and do all kinds of difficult acrobatic moves. I don't know what it is, but it was a hip crowd, and I was feeling old, to tell you the truth. But their next big event is Cured and Crafted on Sunday, April 9th, 10 to 4. It's a celebration of local craft food and drink makers. It's very fun. It's out in the open. It's
and you'll free. Be you have a different role other than covering it.
I'll be ham pimp.
You're the ham man.
That's what I'm calling it. So my role in country ham coverage and things like that has put me in the role of representing several of the ham makers there who can't be there. So I'll talk country ham and give you a slice or two.
Awesome. Good stuff. Very good.
So let's talk about the eating and drinking that went on last week. You got to go to High Five Donuts. I haven't been there yet.
Well, it's sort of a fun place. You know, we talked on the show with Andy Bleeden about what's going on down on East Main in Butchertown, and High Five Donuts has been open for a couple months now, I think. And a delightful couple that a couple of ladies that run the place. But I was down there actually for Rusty Satellite Show. I was talking with the father, Lyle Sussman, is a professor, a management professor. The funny thing is, I'll tell the story real quickly, is that his daughter came home. She had a regular job and was making good money, and she said, I'm going to quit and make donuts. And he, the management professor who teaches entrepreneurism at U of L, said, I think he said, donuts? It's donuts.
And she so sure anyway, showed him.
While I was down there, that's a great story. I'm going to interview the ladies for this show next week.
Nice.
And I had a wonderful chocolate pecan donut.
You can skip those pecans. You ruined your donut there. Oh,
it was awesome.
You stuff them in a pie or something.
And you know what was cool? I got a carton of chocolate milk with it. Awesome.
Oh my gosh! What was chocolate milk. Your poor pancreas was in shock with all that sugar coming in. So I kind of went down home and humble. I was in Bardstown last week to do a barrel pick at Heaven Hill, and the Heaven Hill guys took us to Pat's Place, which is a diner of sorts in Bardstown, and I got basically a meat and two
So it really good roast beef, green beans, and mashed potatoes. I love that kind of stuff. And that's real comfort food. It was delicious. Service was great. I would recommend going there if you're in Bardstown, for sure.
Didn't have a drink with that, though, did you?
No, we've been sipping whiskey all morning. I was happy to have iced tea and water, trust me.
Well, I can't believe it. I think it's still dry. Like, they don't sell it at the restaurants there, do they?
Oh, no, that's not true.
No, okay.
No, the booze floweth.
I had another town in my head.
Not sure. But speaking of drinks, what you had a good one out at Livino, right?
The Brooklyn? Well, you know, out in the East End, my girlfriend Paula, she's always, we're always trying to go to cool, neat places. And she didn't realize, even though I know we reported on this show about the opening of the Middletown Livino's some months ago, she didn't realize it was out there. So I took her out there.
That's a beautiful restaurant, isn't it?
It really is. I was very tempted to go with like the Jennifer Lawrence flights. They're all bubbly.
I like the names of their flights. They're cool.
Yeah, they are very cool names. But instead, I was in a bourbon mood, so I had the top of their list is something called the Brooklyn, which is very similar to an old fashioned. It's a bourbon drink, a little touch of orange peel on it, and satisfied.
Sounds good. Well, I went off the board on this one for sure. I was judging a cocktail contest for the bourbon sampler, which is kind of gins up some energy for the Bourbon Festival in Bardstown. Two visits to Bardstown in a week. So the winning drink was my favorite, thankfully. It was called the Pedal Pusher, and it was made by Colleen Clark, who is a bartender here in Louisville at Martini Italian Bistro.
Okay.
And it's bourbon, ruby red grapefruit juice, lavender syrup, mint, and a little bit of ruby red soda. It was delicious. Now, whether she can make it out at Martini, I'm not sure, but they have a 70 martini menu out there that I'm going to go try some of this week and report back, of course. But I mean, she's a sweetheart, great bartender too. Colleen Clark, ask for her.
That sounds awesome. I'm glad you're picking winners, Steve. Keep that going.
Well, there's only three judges, wasn't that hard? two drinks were outstanding, several were average, and one was really bad. I'm not going to say whose that was, but it was like, did you taste this before you made it? No, I don't think so. You're smiling, and this brings a frown to my face. But
all right, well, before we get to our second guest, let's talk about our sponsors once again.
As always, Harvest. Now, this month's Harvest Chef's Table sold out, which is great.
Yeah.
Because that's a hot ticket, folks. You get in on these things. It was a Freedom Run Lamb Farm. So Patrick Roney is doing a lamb-centered multi-course dinner. I guess it'll be Thursday night of this week. Can't get into that one, but next month is on April 27th.
April 27th.
And as this warm weather comes in, we're going to get more fun, more diverse ingredients, so you don't want to miss on these things. So call up 384-9090. Get a reservation. Can't do these online for the chef's table, but you want to get in. It's a really special event.
And you should also call our other sponsor, the Eye Care Institute, at 502-589-1500. Right down here in Butchertown. It's right at the foot of the Story Avenue exit, if you are familiar with the way the roads work around here. But it's a one-stop shop for eye care, no matter what your problem, whether it's a routine vision issue or significant correction like LASIK. Call them at Eye Care Institute, 589-1500.
So my guest this week is, we mentioned him earlier, Brett Davis and Jacob Coronado, the owner and the executive chef at the upcoming Red Herring Lounge and Kitchen, Cocktail Lounge and Kitchen, I should stress. Let him tell you about the details of this place. It's just going to be fantastic, especially the way that they are setting it up to be very employee-centered as well. I mean, they're going to have anybody who works in the front of the house will be able to make drinks. Anybody who works, and so they'll be serving as well, serving tables, and the cooks will be bringing food out to the tables.
I read that in your story, and I did a double take. So the guys in the back in the kitchen are going to bring your food out to your table.
That's right. I wouldn't call it a trend yet, but this is will be the only restaurant around here that's doing it. Well, Cumberland Brews does it, honestly.
Yeah.
But whether those guys get tips, I don't know. But it's there are restaurants across the country that are doing that more to get the back of the house in front of the customer. So it's kind of cool. So listen in while Brett Davis tells us what's going to happen at the Red Herring Cocktail Lounge and Kitchen.
All right, and thanks for tuning in to Eat, Drink, Talk. Be sure and tell your friends about it, and catch us online at eatdrinktalk.net.
Dessert? Yes, please.
If you notice any background noise, folks, it's because we are at the construction site of what will become the Red Herring, and that is the former Hilltop Theater. Right, Brett Davis, owner?
That's correct. Theater was built in 1915. The last entity here was the Conti costume shop.
So and, surrounded by tile and
oh, yeah.
Gothic, what would you call it? Not artwork, but...
No, it's gothic molding. And, molding, and even back then for theaters, this is pretty simple design. But you'll see all these the type moldings in the design you don't see anymore.
Yeah, but this is going to be a cocktail-centric establishment. I don't even call it a restaurant or even call it a bar because it doesn't sound like that would be befitting. Talk to us about your concept and why you named it Red Herring.
Well, we're calling it a cocktail lounge and kitchen because I think they're going to have equal footing. It's... You know, people always expect me to do wine concepts, but in Louisville, I've done a whiskey concept, and now I'm doing a cocktail concept because all things beverage. But, you know, people will want to eat with what they drink, and so we've hired what we think is one of the best chefs in the city to come on and provide food 7 nights a week.
And he's standing out here with us. That's Jacob Coronado.
Hello.
Welcome, man.
Thanks, man. Good
new job. Second one I've seen you at here. Formerly of 8 Up. You were executive chef a year and a half there. Is that right?
2 years.
2 years.
Yeah.
Time flies.
Time does fly, yeah. Love the place. Sad to leave, but happy to start this this new concept. So
talk a little bit about either of you can jump in about what, since we're already on the subject of food, what kind of food can people expect here?
I think... we're really trying to give people, you know, a lounge environment, something they can grab and just and eat very easily, not necessarily need silverware, but also one of the key things is we're going to do, you know, fresh ingredients, everything from scratch, and local, everything local. That's the key.
So the menu is under construction, just like the facility, I gather.
Yeah. We still got to play. I need a kitchen to play in for a second, and then it'll be, I got a structure. And then after that, we'll go from there once I get to play with the ingredients.
Sorry, Brett. Let's talk about cocktails. Number one, what did you model this after? Because you threw a couple of names of restaurant, cocktail concepts out in Houston and Chicago that have been your inspiration.
Well, I mean, the Violet Hour is always everyone's inspiration. Toby Maloney designed that years ago, and it's one of the places that kind of started the movement.
Which gave life to 732 Social.
Oh, yes,
right?
It did.
Yeah.
And there's also a place in Houston called the Anvil Bar, which is one of my favorites in the country as well, because they're a little more casual. And when I say friendly, I'm not saying the Valley Hour is not friendly, but it's really guest-centric. And they have their list of 100 cocktails, which is going to be very similar to what we do here. We're going to have a book of what we think of the most traditional classic cocktails, and then a few of our house made. But we also have a blender behind our bar, so we're going to be doing frozen drinks, and you can get adult milkshakes. We're going to have a domestic lager, either Pabst Blue Ribbon or Bud Light, poured at 29 degrees into a frozen chalice. So we're not trying to be snooty. We want to appeal to everyone.
Well, and you had discussed the prices are going to be $9 or less for cocktails?
That is our goal. I mean, there might be a couple cocktails on that list of 100 because of their ingredients that might break the $10 mark. It's just because that's just the nature of the drink. Especially when we have a Long Island iced tea. You know, who knows how high that gets because we'll probably use pretty good ingredients for that Long Island tea.
Will it be a whiskey experience here at all? Or?
Of course. I already have a barrel lined up for us. But we're not going to go to the expense of, say, Doc Crow's with over 100 bourbons or 200 whiskeys. We want to be more moderate in our selection as far as the depth of it. Because, you know, it's all about the cocktail.
And so how do you plan to execute speed of service in that environment? Because obviously you got to be well prepared to turn them quickly. I mean, is there going to be any kegging involved, anything like that?
Nope, because kegging is illegal, so we would not do that.
Because the health board's all scared of citrus, right? Isn't that the issue, unpasteurized
that,
citrus?
And, you know, I think it's a law that could probably be changed easily, but no one's just bothered to do it. But we want fresh ingredients. We want a fresh cocktail being made. And if it's all liquor-based, then that's fine to do kegging. But once you put citrus in there, it's going to start breaking down. Classic cocktails tend to have three base ingredients. And there's a certain simplicity to them. It's people's variations of the classic cocktails and these mixologists, I'm saying that in quotes, by the way, who want to make things very busy in their drinks and try to I don't know, put a human hair in there or something to make it different.
Light on fire.
Exactly. We want to do
great
more
aroma.
We're going to stick to that classic simplicity. Uh-huh. And so if everyone has these drinks memorized, they know exactly how the recipes. So you should be able to do these recipes pretty quick.
And speed of services.
And there'll always be two. There'll be two bartenders behind the bar, but the staff will. The front of house staff will consist of bartenders. We're not going to have your traditional server. So the server can jump back there and start making drinks as well. And you might have, the service here is going to be very unique. The person who cooks your food is very likely to be the person serving your food.
Absolutely.
The person who makes your drink is very likely the person going to be serving you your drink. It's going to be all hands on when it comes to service.
I love that. And I've seen, especially with, let that car go by. Jacob, I've seen some concepts where it's an open kitchen, and the cooks come out and serve the food. How are you going to train these guys to serve?
I think basically it's just going to be cross training. I talked to
cooks can be a bit surly.
Yeah.
Shall we say.
Well, I've talked to my team, and that's the difference is the environment that we work under, and the way we cook is we cook for everybody. You know, we cook for the people. We're a team. So my team is really excited to do everything. They're excited to see the other side. In fact, some of them have had ideas like that in the past of why can't we serve and they cook for a second so we can all see what we do, you know, what each other, you know, the struggles that we all have. So I think that our team is, I can say for a fact that the back of the house is really excited to be a part of that as well.
I think that's cool because it gives them an opportunity to see the guest and relate to the guest. I mean, you can be surly when you never see them sometimes.
The restaurant sometimes gets divided and it just happens.
Sure
it's a natural thing, but I think what we're trying to build here is, it's awesome. Like, it's revolutionary. You know, everybody works for everybody. And it's easier said than done. There's going to be a lot of hard work with it. But
as Brett's nodding,
it's very possible.
You had said a moment ago to me that you're fully staffed already. It's the first time in your restaurant history that's happened. Pre-opening. What has driven that? The excitement to try this?
I think it's the uniqueness of the concept and the uniqueness of the design. We're trying to make this a B Corporation restaurant. And that's a whole other interview, by the way, because it takes a long time to describe. But it's about the stakeholder over the stockholder, and the stakeholders being your employees, your guests, and your community. So we want to treat our staff in a different fashion. We're trying to make it where no one works more than 40 hours a week and still makes a good living. We want to provide education and get them ready for their next step in their careers, no matter where it is, whether it's in the restaurant business or anything. It's really about the staff. And I think
kind of a Danny Meyer, thought process there.
I guess so. I mean, your great restaurateurs all tend to have that process. When I lose someone, and I cheer them as they go on in their career, you know. And that's, if you're not like that, I mean, I don't want people who just want to settle. You know, you're looking for people who want to strive and improve themselves and keep moving forward.
Speaking of moving forward, let's talk. Last question: when's it opening?
Our projected goal is the third week of April, or the last week of April, and that has nothing to do with Derby. Derby's not going to affect this place because no one's going to know we're here from out of town, and I think we're going to hit it. If not, it'll be the second week of May, but I have a feeling we're going to hit that April deadline because I've got my schedule, and everything is on schedule at this point.
That's another first. In your career.
It is.
I'm sure. Now all you got to do is get the permits and all that stuff, and you'll be golden.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, thanks so much for being a part of the podcast.
All right, see you
when it opens.
Thanks, Steve.
If you just can't get enough, catch up on the news of the city's restaurant scene every single day by visiting www.eatdrinktalk.net. Steve and Rick share all the latest local scoop from Louisville's restaurants and bars. You can also find old episodes of the show and connect with the guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Eat well, my friends. Another episode next week.